welcome to the Every Movie Ever podcast. My name is Ben Gross.
And my name is Rob McFarlane. Welcome to the show, a movie podcast slash mental health check-in for two broken-brained best friends talking around their problems,
yeah,
but never about their problems.
Nah.
Whilst laughing at movies. So, before we get into what we're doing, Ben, how are you doing, buddy?
I am happy to announce that I am no longer suffering with mental illness, buddy.
Well, that's the show fucked, isn't it?
Yeah, but I'm selfish. No longer suffering.
Selfish.
I'm thriving in it. You know what I mean? I'm professional in it, mate.
You got the platinum trophy, yeah?
I'm the fucking one, buddy. I'm using it as a suit of armor. I'm like, nice. I've made a decision this week.
Oh, right.
I'm sick to the back fucking teeth of being negative. I'm sick to the back teeth of like doing the whole, oh shit, so hard and it's all this and it's all that. I'm just going to take everything
as it is. I'm incapable.
Fuck that, man. I'm capable. Yeah. I'm all right. I'm breathing. I'm fucking working. I'm eating. I've got my beautiful dog around me. I've got my beautiful buddy looking at me right now.
Oh, babe.
I've got some fucking great people around me. Like, what realistically am I sitting around being defeated about? Do you know what I mean? There's nothing that's going to take me down. I mean, my lung hurts. That, you know.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. Like, the lung's quite bad. Do you know what I think this is, Ben? I think this is you realizing that you may not have all that long. And so best not be a grumpy cunt about it, eh?
That's what I mean. I need to leave a good image. This is all it is. This is my last desperate attempt. So if it is terminal, people go, oh, what a good guy. Oh,
took it like a champ, didn't he?
Oh,
took
man,
it like a champ. Yeah.
Good egg.
Make jokes about it to the end.
Yeah, definitely. That's
it. And then it would just be, you know, you and I doing the last episode covering the Bee Movie.
Yeah.
With the sound of your respirator in the background.
You talking about Jerry Seinfeld through gritted teeth and tears.
And then eventually I'll just do a long end of the show consume and then just be
boop, boop, boop,
beep. And I'd leave that for fucking ages as well.
You'd just leave it for ages and then all you'd hear is like a doctor kick the door down and be like, why the fuck didn't you push the buzzer? He's dead now. And you'll be like, but it's fine. I only need to do one more episode a year. You know what I mean?
Good thing you just come back on it, yeah.
That's what I mean. On the anniversary of my death day. Dude, we're planning this for you.
I'm still sad. Sad. Merch available.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Every Movie Ever podcast. My name is Rob McFarlane, and I'm alone.
My friend died by a t-shirt.
Oh, man, that's going to be good. That's going to be good. How are you, man?
Well, I've booked my vasectomy.
What?
Yeah, mate, going to get sterilized.
I don't, like, okay, I'm going to be supportive. I'm going to go, that's good. I'm glad you've done what you wanted to do. I'm also fucking terrified at the thought of someone snipping at your bollocks. You're essentially walking around with an empty coin purse for the rest of your life.
Mate, I'm going to call it my Christmas tree cock because the balls will just be for decoration.
Oh, that really hurt my chest.
Also, I get to look a woman in the eye and be like, I can't have kids. I kid you not.
Wow.
Right.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm not kidding you.
Oh.
I'm sterile.
Yeah.
I get to describe myself as a barren man. And, oh, mate, I love that.
Just a quick one, though. When they do the vasectomy, obviously they're going to snip the tubes. Are they going to cut out these fucking horrendous dad jokes at the same time? Or
Do
they like fall out over time?
That's the hope. Right. I'm doing this for the show, all right?
We need to bring that level up, mate.
Yeah.
Less puns, you know what I mean? Less puns.
Yeah. And
what do I do to get rid of my puns? Fuck it, snip them. Get them gone.
What are we doing this week, Ben?
This week, buddy, we are doing Abigail, the latest 2024 installment into the Dracula universe. And what I want to know from you, bud, is what does Abigail bring to the table for the Dracula extended universe? Is it a useful DLC or is it a shit pay to play that leaves you sorely disappointed at the end of the campaign?
For me, this is horse armor. This is just 25 quid.
Okay.
It looks a bit different, but it's the same fucking horse.
Right, still horse. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Abigail came out in 2024. It cost $28 million to make, and it made $41 million at the box office, which is pretty fucking good.
For a horror movie, that's pretty good. They normally make a shocking loss.
Sometimes.
I feel like the genre is named after what it does to the accountants at the studios.
I mean, Pearl did all right at the box office. I mean, admittedly, in the UK, it did all right because they released it a year and a half.
I still haven't seen those movies. We should cover those movies.
Can we actually? They're fucking mint.
Yeah, we can cover them.
And Maxine's coming out. Right, fuck you. We're doing it. It's going to be wicked.
Right, job done.
Terrifier 2 did all right. That came out in the cinema for one day and was fucking jam-packed for every screening. So that was fine. But you are right. Horror films tend to sort of flop on their ass a little bit. I think this is great for a Dracula movie. I mean, look at the ones that we've had recently. What was the Nick Cage one? Fucking Renfield.
Oh, Renfield.
Piece of shit.
Dracula was brilliant in that. Renfield was dog shit. And unfortunately, the film was called Renfield.
Absolute horseshit. Couldn't get over how bad that film was. Every other character bar Renfield was mint.
Right? Last Voyage of the Demeter was fine. It was fine.
Fine. Sure. You know, I wasn't asleep.
It's Alien, set in the 1800s. There's a monster. You can't get out of a haunted house because you're in the middle of the sea rather than space.
Sure. But then you've got like Blood Vessel, who's done it before. Blood Vessel was fun. So I wanted to pick this film because I struggle with vampire movies and Dracula movies. I like the old school Dracula movies, right? Bela Lugosi, fucking mint, right? Super fun.
Yeah, 100%.
We've done those episodes. Go listen to them. They're super fun. I struggle with other vampire movies because they have this weird standard that they all try and hit, and I can't break this connection in my brain that every vampire movie, if it was a human, if it was hit by lightning and became a living person, would be a fucking an edgelord, fedora wearing, waistcoat wearing, tip the hat, m'lady, to his Discord kitten type person. And I cannot shake that image. I'm not sorry for it because I've seen that person about five times in my life, right? And I love that person from a distance. Being close to that person, fucking terrifying.
Well, let's get into that. But before we do, let's break down the movie. I'll play the jingle. Ready?
You know, like some... We're having a breakdown.
Right, I wrote it this week. It's going to give you some, might give you a slight hint as to how I got on with this movie.
Okay.
In the dead of night, we meet our crew of six New York criminals. All bases are covered here. We get an apparently sexy blonde hacker chick who does movie fast typing.
Yeah.
We've got a stupid but lovable strong guy. We've got a cynical beat detective. Loser black-coded white guy, upstanding white-coded black guy, and a junkie with a heart of gold. I'm convinced they do that so they can kill the blackest character without being accused of racism.
Right. By making him white. Yeah. How to avoid being a racist. Make stereotypical black guy white.
Yeah. Just sound. Have everything about him be a black stereotype from like 90s crack LA. But played by a white guy. They steal a rich kid for ransom.
They do.
And then they go and meet Gus from Breaking Bad, who tells them to hide in this totally not spooky murder mansion for like 24 hours while he sorts out crime stuff.
Yeah, that is exactly what's going on there. Our crazy criminal crew, spelled with all K's, for extra kooky fun. Then it says here, ... Not for race hate reasons.
Well, yeah, because this film.
Oh, the KKK.
Yeah, there we go. They're like, ooh, I'm going to spell it with K's because it's kooky. I did the three K's and I was like, ooh, is that going to be a dog whistle? I don't want people to get the wrong idea.
All right.
So I had to clarify the KKK thing was pure accident, and it's the bit I'm least happy about.
Yeah, happy accident. Least happy about it, right?
Yeah.
I hear what you're saying. Yeah. So our crazy criminal crew, all K's, not for race hate reasons, try to get along for the early evening, having been given code names to use amongst themselves. Gold-hearted junkie Joey uses her magical junkie powers to mind read backstories out of the rest of the crew, so the audience has the exposition, and they have a reason to not immediately flee when the stolen girl tells them her father is feared hyper-criminal Christoph Lazar, a man known for leaving the dismembered bodies of his victims scattered around the crime scenes.
Yeah, he piñatas people, basically.
Yeah.
And she goes, oh, my dad's Christoph Lazar. And then everyone's like, oh, she said what? And then they're like, oh, my God, you've not heard. And obviously there's people in the crew who haven't heard, so that the audience can be told. There's one person who's like, I don't know who that is. So they can go, well, allow me to provide exposition for the audience for a minute or two.
All right, listen, it's not It's not the greatest written, but it's fun. Fuck you.
Right.
Continue.
But in a shock twist that will surprise no one who saw the trailer, poster, or even a tweet about this movie, the little girl is a vampire.
Ooh, spoilers.
She kills the skeezy, greasy, black-coded white guy.
Yep.
And he's like, oh, man. Oh, shit, bruh. It's awful. That's literally what the man does. I can't say that. The actor's actually dead now. I should be a bit more respectful.
Continue talking about recently deceased Angus Young in this way. Go on.
The house enters lockdown mode. It shutters the windows and doors with steel gates, and it traps our crew of cliches in the house. Mm-hmm. Abigail goes about munching on miscreants in annoying, meandering ways. But she always gives them ample time to run away and have a little chat between each of her bites.
She does.
God, that was a bit scary, wasn't it? Yeah, that was a bit intense. Oh, what are we going to do? Dunno. I'm not equipped for this. Oh, shall we just... Oh, wait, she's coming back. Ah, okay. And then they have a little fight scene and then they run. It's Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
This is justified as her playing with her food. Except the food is perfectly capable of beating her multiple ways. It's like me if I was hunting a wolf for dinner.
Okay.
I wouldn't play with my food. I would prioritize survival. The reason I play with my fish finger sandwich is because it can't beat the shit out of me.
First off, you hunting a wolf, hilarious image. Thank you very much for that. That's going to live with me for a little while. Second of all,
in my blazer and my city town shoes.
Yeah, your fucking magician blazer, right?
I've got mud on my limited edition Dr. Martens.
Oh, my days.
The print is ruined.
All right. All right, that's the end of this fantasy. It's already annoyed me. All right, the next one. So, the film progresses with our kidnappers in battle with the 12-year-old, who's hundreds of years old, but also somehow still a fucking moron. Will our thieves prevail? Or will they all end up lunch? And how does Gus from Breaking Bad keep getting these fucking roles?
Right. He's at a computer game.
Yeah.
In playing this character.
He's just this character.
Based on a character he played. He's just that guy.
Yeah. He's in that one film. I can't remember what it's called, but I saw it the one time and it was really good. I think he directed it or wrote it. It's like a TV show where you kill yourself, but your family get loads of money and they televise it for entertainment.
Big Brother.
It's actually really cool. It might be. It was on Channel 5.
No, I can't do that. Some of them have actually killed themselves.
Was one of them Gus from Breaking Bad?
No, nor Angus from this film.
There you go, we're in the clear. I appreciate this breakdown, buddy, because A, it tells me exactly what you think of this film, which is fine. It's understandable, right? I get that this film isn't for everyone, and I can appreciate that this isn't your cup of tea.
I was really confused when you picked it, because
I know
there are films that you've brought that I've hated, but you've been like, this really means a lot to me because... And it'll be a film that you grew up with, or like Ghostbusters. Yep. I love Ghostbusters, but there'll be a reason. There'll be something for us to chat about. This film, I watched it. I was like, well, this comes third in a mediocrity contest.
Yes.
It's just, I've got nothing. I've personally got nothing positive to say about it. Nothing particularly negative either. I won't remember this film next week. And then I was like, why are you bringing this? And you're like, it's just fun. And I'm like, what are we going to do for a show, mate?
I've got this down, mate. Are you ready for this? Because I knew that this was going to be your reaction, so I've planned this ahead and told you nothing.
Okay. Right.
So, I know that you love vampire movies, right?
Some. Yeah. My bar is high.
Yes.
There's a lot of shit ones.
Okay.
But there's also quite a few of the shit ones I quite like.
Exactly, right? Whereas I cannot fucking stand vampire movies, and there is one reason why.
Okay.
And it's because there is a film that exists in the real world, directed by none other than Park Chan-wook, the same guy that brought us the Vengeance trilogy, right? A film called Thirst.
Thirst is great.
Which is one of the best, not just vampire films, it's one of the best films that I remember seeing, and it changing my life.
Right, yeah.
Like nothing before. It genuinely had such an impact on me that I was like, oh my God, this is what vampire films can be.
Yes.
Why the fuck do we have a million of these shitty ones from the early 2000s where everyone's in like a leather duster going, ugh, now it's dinner time. Do you know what I mean? It's like, fuck you, man. Yeah. So anyway, I hate vampire films.
Yeah.
The bar has been set so unbelievably high by Thirst. Nothing's ever going to come close to it.
That's fair.
Because it's quite a serious film. And I always find that vampire films are either very serious or they're very over the top, sort of like kung fu movies. But everyone's really sexy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm like, About all of them.
There's two types of vampire films you've named there.
Yes.
And so, right, the vampire is as a metaphor for constantly changing societal ills. We looked at this when we covered the Universal Monsters.
Yes.
A year or so ago. In 1936 Dracula, it's immigrants, specifically Eastern European Jewish immigrants, coming over and bringing their bloodborne diseases, right?
Yes.
In Bram Stoker's Dracula, the remake in the mid-90s, it's sexy immigrants coming over and cuckolding you because they're better at sex than you, and they're sexier because they're exotic and they're...
And it's also the weirdest fucking film I've ever seen in my life, which is, you know, that's up there with my...
It's a fever dream.
It's my second favourite vampire film, and it's fucking terrible. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Right, exactly.
Or you've got, more recently, you've got Twilight, which is very obviously a Mormon allegory where, like... biting is an allegory for sex because it's penetrative. Usually vampires is kind of a sex allegory. And the idea being that, you know, Edward's not going to bite Bella until they're married and you shouldn't let anyone else bite you and they all want to bite her and blah, 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 blah.
Don't go out with another man, not even to the shops.
So because of the era it was born, a lot of vampire movies sort of follow period drama.
Yeah.
Settings, which is, right?
It's not my cup of tea.
The reason being is that sex in that period is still seen as transgressive. The idea that casual sex was not a thing that you could do.
And but you know what was a thing? Sexy ankles.
Right. Sexy ankles is your bar, and then a guy comes in and he's fucking Gary Oldman, and he's like, do you want to fuck me while I'm a wolf in the garden? That's, you know?
Mm.
The other thing you mentioned was the reaction to that in the early 2000s when someone went, what if vampires, but not period drama? And that's where we got Blade, we got Underworld, we got Dracula 2000, we got Queen of the Damned.
Shit.
And it was a deliberate contrast. They are, but I kind of, they're so shit. I know
the
Underworld movies, mate. Kate Beckinsale, I can't lie, was an incredibly formative influence on my sexual development.
She was for everyone. I don't think there's a living person that can turn around and look at Kate Beckinsale in that movie and go, nah, it just doesn't happen. You know what I mean?
I know. Yeah, of course. For me, what I love about vampire films, and this is why I only like some of them, is I love the idea that the mistakes you make are permanent and you have to live with them forever.
Yes.
And it's the horrifying thing of, like, you've got eternal life.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah.
You're never going to be able to grow or change or develop. You're stuck here.
Yeah.
Much like the antagonist in this film.
Yeah.
How are you going to live with that? The Interview with the Vampire adaptation with Kirsten Dunst's first role. And she's a 12-year-old girl who gets turned and she's like, what the fuck? And the two adult vampires are like, oh shit, we have to deal with this forever. Like, we fucked up. And it's not like, in 100 years, this will be fine. I just have to move and just pretend I didn't do that for 100 years. Like,
right? Sure.
That's the kind of vampire fiction I love. And I was, I think, disappointed that this film didn't go down the route of all the things I was interested in about a 12-year-old vampire hunting people.
No, I see where you're coming from. I think it does a little bit, but this brings me to my second point. This is the second reason why I bought this film. I think this arguably is more important because it's not for me and you.
Right.
I think this film is doing something important. And I think it's doing something important in the ways of...
You're going to have to qualify this because I'm about to punch you.
I'm going to... I know. Hear me out. Let me get to it. Right. So you know how I look fondly on 80s B-movies, right?
Yes.
Evil Dead franchise is one of my all-time favorite things that exists. Friday the 13th, one of the best franchise that exists, in my opinion.
Yes.
You've got ridiculous films back then.
Mm-hmm.
I'm obsessed with all of them. And it's because I saw them at a young age and they were fun and they were goofy and some of them had lessons. A lot of them had tits.
Yeah.
Some of them had penis. But the majority of them just had blood, guts, and it was a fucking rip-roaring good time.
Yeah.
And I will look back on that as with all the nostalgia in the world, right? So in 2024, to see a film that comes out that is reminiscent of how 80s B movies play out. It's just done with a bigger budget. It's done with bigger actors. It's done with a fuck ton of blood and gore. And the main thing that went through my head was, this is going to be such a good memory for an entire generation in 20 years' time.
That's bold.
It's not for me and you. We're not going to have that. We're not going to have that connection to it because we're past that point. We're at the point now where we're dissecting our severe mental health with like taking lessons from films, right? Arguably, I don't think there's a lesson in here for us. I just needed to appreciate the fact that a film in 2024, same directors as Ready or Not. I don't know if you've seen Ready or Not. It's a great horror movie.
I haven't.
It's dark, it's twisted, it's a game of cat and mouse. It's sort of, it's head fucky at times. A lot of gruesome deaths. The whole premise is severely fucked up, but it's a very fun film to watch and be a part of. Do you learn something from it?
Right, yeah, yeah.
Hate the rich. Don't trust the posh. That's essentially the lesson, right? So I love it. but it's just fun. It's the same guys that did that. So they've taken something that is normally very serious and very sort of like, oh, you fucked up. This is an allegory for AIDS. Or this is, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get
and
that.
And they've put a fun little spin on it for a new generation of people to have in 20 years' time. They're going to buy a Blu-ray fucking or whatever the fuck we're watching in the future.
Yeah, yeah.
They're going to buy like a limited edition box set. They're going to be loading up their old Blu-ray players and they're going to go, fuck me, kids, you ready for this? This is going to be...
The new 32K restoration of Abigail's out.
That's what I mean. Yeah, stuff yeah, like this. Yeah, it's going to be fucking awesome for them. And that's what I love. I love the fact that filmmakers still have the love of 80s B movies within them. They're putting movies out now. Admittedly, yeah, it was spoiled in the trailers and all that bullshit. It didn't really bother me. It doesn't take anything away from the film. And it was a good time. It was just a good fucking time.
I feel the spoiler thing is almost intentionally like this film, successfully or not, you say successfully, I say infuriatingly.
Okay.
It leans into cliche.
It does.
Not a single thing happens in this film you don't expect.
Yes.
The premise is set up and you immediately go, this is what's going to happen. You meet the characters, you go, that's the one that's going to survive. That's the one that's going to die first.
Yes.
That's going to go wrong.
Yes.
She's lying.
Yes.
Like, there isn't a single surprise in the film. Not one.
I'm going to disagree. I had one surprise in this film and it caught me off guard.
Is it in Act 1 or 2?
No, it's within the vampire lore. The vampiric
lore.
Then
we're not dealing with it if it's a spoiler, because this is a new film.
No, it's not a spoiler. It's just the way that the vampires react to sunlight caught me off guard.
Oh, okay. Oh, meaning that they fucking instantaneously explode.
Yes, okay. It's fucking wicked. Normally they're like burning and like screeching like...
Yeah, yeah, that did make me giggle.
But second the sunlight hits Abigail's hand and it fucking erupts like a hand grenade has just gone off. Amazing.
Right.
That's the one thing that caught me off guard. But I'm with you wholeheartedly on the rest.
That would have made a fantastic YouTube video for me.
It would have, yeah.
I think the difference in the way we consume movies, and we've discussed it on the podcast before, is you use movies as an anesthetic.
I do. I use it to an escape the sort of full Nelson of life.
Whereas
sometimes,
I think I often use movies as physio. I use them as a safe space to go through emotions and sort of test drive emotions and practice emotions that I can then take into my real life.
Got you.
If there's nothing in there for me to take into my real life, it's not speaking to my life in any way.
Yeah, yeah.
It has to be very, very fun.
Yeah, definitely.
Godzilla versus Kong. We just covered Godzilla X Kong, the New Empire, right? I'm not sat there going, what lessons can I take from this robot-handed monkey twatting this lizard?
So I can use children as battering weapons.
Okay, no, that is
the lesson I'm taking away from this.
But,
there you go.
But I'm just watching. Give I'm watching out. That for fun. But for fun, I have to be given something I'm not expecting. And this film, successfully or unsuccessfully, like I said, you love it. It isn't for me that it leans so hard into cliche. It's a little bit like you don't like slapstick because the guy walks onto screen with a plank and he looks at the camera and he juggles his eyebrows and then he slaps someone with the plank. This is 2 hours of the writers doing that to me. They're like, oh, we know how this is going to go, don't we? Don't we? And then they do it and they're like, see, isn't it clever? We're doing the accidental bad thing, but on purpose. So we're clever. And I'm like, walking into the room and filling your pants with feces on purpose and going, ha-ha, people normally do this on accident. Aren't I clever? I'm like, it's just a bit smelly.
You still shit yourself.
Right. You can't ironically fuck a donkey.
You still shit yourself.
And if it's not teaching me something and it's just meaningless fun, it has to be fun. Otherwise, all that's left is meaningless. And I think this film made me quite viscerally angry. And it's only with the passage of time I've gone, oh, I don't need to be that angry about it. It is just a film.
Yeah. I'm like I said this earlier on. I'm done with being negative. I'm fucking over it now. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm doing if it's negative to me. If I'm feeling negative about it, I'm just going to leave it alone, or I'm going to try and put a positive spin on it. So excuse me whilst I positive spin the shit out of this. You ready?
Yes.
I love the fact that in most Dracula movies, Dracula is set up to be some sort of like love-torn, uber-romance allegory, and he's always painted in a light where he's shifty.
Yeah.
And he's gross.
Yeah, he's the original fuckboy.
And he's intense. He's a fuckboy, yeah. But he's meant to doing what he's doing, right? Okay, so...
I love you, and then he bites you, and then he doesn't see you for 200 years. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he's just sort of like, no, you're just there for when I need now. Yeah. All right, so just... I'm going to fuck off for 1,000 years. Yeah. And, you know, I'll be back eventually. I don't know. Send for a coffin or some shit. I don't know. And it's fine. It's just fine. Aggressively fine. Right. That's what it is. So in this film, one of my favorite aspects, there's a little bit of mental gymnastics here. So, you know, come on this trip
with me.
That's
all right. It's
good. So Dracula doesn't show up until the end.
Doesn't.
It's always heavily implied that Dracula's her father, right? And it's never explicitly said either. But he shows up at the end. And the biggest piece of shit.
Yeah, he's a cock.
It's just a piece
he's
of
just
shit.
A cock.
He's an absolute cock. Yeah. There's the whole film. He's made out to be this fucking evil, neglective piece of shit father who's just turned his daughter, abandoned her, and then be like, "Fucking deal with it. Do something. I don't love you. I don't need to be around you. Fucking do something." But then also, when you really sit there and think about it, right? I mean, Dracula's this sort of love torn. He has human emotions. He has the love and the bonding and the passion, right?
Right.
In every other movie that exists. So you assume that this Dracula is of the same cloth. That's what I'm going to do anyway.
Right. Yeah.
And all he's done is he's lived long enough to become the uber mensch criminal. You know what I mean? He's like the empire criminal of like everything. And Abigail is this person desperately trying to win her father's affection by hunting down, tricking, torturing, and then eventually murdering her father's enemies or people that have done something bad to her father's legacy or her father's empire.
Yeah.
Really let it sink in that Dracula in this film has done nothing.
Yeah.
For his daughter, right? He's the biggest criminal. I'm going to go global, right? He's the biggest criminal on the planet.
You can assume, yeah.
He's got a huge empire that spans across Northern America. And rather than passing down any sort of like success or wealth or family business knowledge, like this is how it works. This is how we take care of business. I'm going to be passing this to you one day.
Yeah.
If I ever get stabbed through the heart with a stake or shot with a silver bullet by Van Helsing... You, Abigail, need to take over my business. He does none of that. What he does is he passes down mental torture, trauma, fucking abandonment issues, daddy issues, all this shit. And she does nothing but sit there and take it and go, "He's my dad. I love him. I need to do something to win him back." It's the fucking...
Yeah. Like a 12-year-old would.
All of this is missing from the film. It's not heavily implied. You have to do this with yourself. It's from the eyes of Abigail, and she's not willing to sit there and tell you about this trauma. But you can piece it together. And this is where it really got fun for me because I was like, as two fully grown adult males whose biological fathers, who were literally biologically programmed to want to be there for us and nurture us and watch us grow into, you know, successful young adults and eventually carry on their legacy, fucked off, right? Yeah. we can sort of see maybe that's where all the effort is coming from.
Here's you know what I mean? I disagree with you because you're a much more paternal man than I am, Ben.
You're getting a fucking vasectomy. Of course I am. You're taking the bit. You're literally getting your dick chopped off.
Yeah.
I don't know what a vasectomy is. I'm just assuming that it is like smooth Ken doll stuff. You know what I mean?
Full Ken. So
I'm just Ken.
So that's one read of the film. It's a read I'd like to have seen explored. What I enjoyed about Abigail as a character is that premise that infinity is a very long time, eternity is a very long time, and as much as you love Killer Clowns from Outer Space, the game right now, and you're just playing the shit out of that.
Oh, hyper-focus isn't even a word, mate. It's like an addiction at this point.
400 years later... You'd probably be a bit bored of it. You'd probably be a bit over it.
I feel like you're sorely underestimating the power of my autism right now.
Right.
In 400 years, if I could live that long, I'd still be bashing it out.
I don't think you would, because you're not... All right, you're still playing the Evil Dead asymmetrical horror game that you were hyper-focused on a while back.
I have it downloaded.
Okay.
But here's to prove my point, right? I bought a PlayStation 5.
Yeah.
And do you know what I've done with my PlayStation 5? Next generation graphics, huge processing powers, insane graphics made for brand new games. Do you know what I've done with it? played Final Fantasy VII, the original, that I could play on my PlayStation 1, but also with a 500 quid fucking bill.
You see,
at the end
I think the film makes the point, and it's one of the few things that I wholeheartedly agree with the film on, is that novelty wears off everything eventually. This 12-year-old child, in order to eat, is like, I'm going to find people related to my father's empire and lock them in a house and pretend to be an innocent girl and wind them all up and make them confused as to what their reality even fucking is. For lunch, that's her lunch plans, because she's so fucking bored. Mm. And I was having this conversation with a friend the other day. I give you, you personally, I reckon you wouldn't make it to 2,000 years old before you tried at least a little genocide.
It wouldn't even scratch. I'd be surprised if I lasted until 200, to be honest with you, man. There'd be a something.
Gandhi
there,
himself,
I mean?
I think eventually, you just get far enough down, you're like, well, fuck it. What have I not tried? And you just look at the list and you'd be like, all of this is bad shit. But like, I've done everything else at least 17 times now. And it's just...
Yeah. I've done the miracles.
I've done the miracles,
I'm a knight.
Right.
I've been blessed by the Pope. What I mean? I've saved world hunger. I've done X, Y, and Z. Right, what's the next thing?
I've been ruler of the world 7 different times. And I'm like, okay, this time, new game plus, I'm going to work. I'm going to start in a different region. I'm going to start in, I'm going to start in China this time. Oh, difficult.
Let's see how far I get here.
Yeah, I'm going to start the first global Arctic empire by pretending to be an Inuit. And I'm going to see if I can just conquer the world for that way. And then by like time 8, you're like, fuck it. It's just do a little genocide. And I agree with the film on that. The perverse apathy that must come with just time. I love any job in the first week.
Same.
First week of a new job. Oh, this is everything I've needed.
It's that new job feeling.
It's everything
I've needed.
I'm so bored at work currently that this week I sent someone a happy birthday message in the group chat. It's not their birthday. And eventually worked this deceit up to the point where they were being sung happy birthday in the middle of the restaurant with a cake in front of them and everyone clapping and singing along.
Amazing.
And they couldn't say anything because all the customers were doing it. That's what I need. That's what I need
incredible.
To get through workday now, Ben.
Yeah.
I would Abigail the shit out of my life in a week.
I mean, how long have you been at this job? Like a year, year and a half?
Yeah.
Yeah, it took you a year and a half to be Abigail, mate. I said 200 years as a joke. It literally took you a year and a half. I give you 10 years before you've done a handful of genocides and you're like, yeah, but maybe if I just tweak it this way and only use scythes, it will be way more fun. And then I can get them in their sexy ankles. Get it? Because you like period dramas? But tush.
Okay.
There you go,
well,
man.
That joke has to make it in the edit now, don't I? Otherwise, this callback's going to make no fucking sense.
There you go. Keep it in, bish. I'm planning for myself. I got a question for you.
Ooh, please.
What's your favorite death? Have you got a favorite death?
No, because it's all essentially meaningless. My interest in the film died about 25 minutes in.
Okay.
So that's my least favorite death.
Okay.
My least favorite death is the death of one of the actors, Angus Cloud, who plays the black-hooded white character.
I don't think that was anyone's favorite death.
No, exactly. The exploding vampires are fine. You know,
they're fun.
The kid actor's good, but again,
are you joking? The kid that plays Abigail?
Yeah, she's good, but I've got a rebuttal to that, Ben.
Good.
She's right. Yeah, she's
good, dude. Alicia Weir fucking kills it in this film.
She does.
In the beginning, when she's a terrified child, I was like, oh my god, this is stressful to watch, and then she turns and I'm like, oh my god, this is stressful to watch. I got trust issues, bro. I've never had a fucking 12-year-old trigger them that bad before, but I was like, consider me triggered. Color me triggered, buddy.
maybe she is good. And this is a dangerous, it's just struck me, so I'm just thinking with my mouth rather than my brain, and it's a dangerous road, so keep me on track here.
Okay.
You know, we mentioned Kate Beckinsale earlier. And that, like, sexy vampires.
I don't like where this is going already. I already don't like where this is going.
I think a tiny part of why I didn't enjoy this film is I subconsciously resented that the vampire wasn't sexy because it was a child. I think there was a bit of my brain that went, I could be watching Kate Beckinsale shrink wrapped into delicious black latex, but this is as far from sexy as it's possible for a vampire to be. Yeah. Edward Cullen is sexier to me than Abigail. And thank God for that, but also, ugh, I could be watching a sexy vampire film. That's what I'm expecting.
Mate, did idiot Beefcake Man not do anything for you? Peter?
He was, again, I wanted to see, I liked the character for the first 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And I was waiting to see what they were going to do with his character to make his character in any way unique from the 2D version that we've seen in 700 other films. And sure. I was like, oh, I can't wait for there to be like, oh, I'm actually really good at Sudoku, or I've only ever read it. I'm actually really good at, do you know what I mean? Like him having a special skill, like Drax does in Guardians of the Galaxy 3, you know?
Kinda,
but no,
sure.
He just stays Drax.
Yeah, but this is the thing though, like the fact, okay, A, he was like the fucking eye candy for me in this movie because it was literally like this enormous beef slice of a man.
Yeah.
Is nothing but pure muscle. He's about 8 feet tall. And then also, he's dumb as fuck, but he's got a face that kind of looks like, almost looks like your first pet hamster that's had a delicious meal and is really happy to be there. Do you know what I mean? It's the cutest fucking thing I've ever seen on the scariest looking body I've ever seen. And I'm like,
do you want to know?
It was confusing.
Fact about Kevin Durant, the actor who plays this sweet beefcake.
Go on.
That's his, you've seen him in loads of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. This is the film in which he uses his real accent. That's what he actually sounds like.
That makes it even better. I would 1,000% take a shot in the mouth from this fucking hamster-faced beefcake. It's incredible. It's incredible.
That got so real so fucking quick. What was your favorite death?
Okay, so I think my favorite death is Sammy.
The blonde hacker chick. Who can do movie fast typing.
Yeah. So she dies. She gets bitten by Abigail and she doesn't become a vampire. She becomes like a puppet, like a familiar where Abigail can take control of her.
Right.
And she kills Peter for a start. So fuck Sammy straight off the bat because how dare you take my darling Peter away from me, cock.
Right. So
that was heartbreaking to watch Peter die. But then the vindication that I got from watching Sammy explode from hitting the sunlight and just sort of like full body explode. And this is after a really cool sequence in the film where Abigail and Sammy are sort of dancing to Danzig, but they're doing like really weird, intense like ballet moves. And it's like 80s, 80s goth kind
of
disco. Dude, it's just that scene. It was great. Danzig's fucking awesome. The dance scene was awesome.
Do you know what ruined that scene for me? Just to shit on your parade. Right.
Go on.
At this point in the film, the house is locked, but it's daylight outside, right? The steel shutters are down over the front door. The steel shutters are down over the windows.
Some of the windows, not all of them.
And Joey, golden-hearted junkie that she is trying to dig through a wall with a fire poker.
She
near
is.
Near an air vent, right?
Yeah.
This is very clearly like a massive supporting wall.
Mm-hmm.
She's found the wall at the center of the house under the highest point and gone, this probably isn't structural. I'll start chipping away.
Yeah. A fire poker could take on this wall.
Yeah, meanwhile, because we're in a chatty bit between Scooby-Doo chase scenes.
Yeah.
They're on patrol, because why not split up and just look for the, you know.
Yeah.
So they're on patrol. Sammy, blonde hacker extraordinaire who's about to turn into a dance sequence. Before she kills Peter, they have a little heart-to-heart. In a part of the house, it's like a little greenhouse.
I think it's like an attic garden thing,
right? Because those are a thing houses have.
I don't know what posh people do, you know what I mean?
Me neither.
Everyone gets weird after 2,000 years, Rob.
Right, fair. Thank you.
Some people want to do a little genocide. Other people, rooftop garden. You know what I mean?
So I would hope you got to rooftop garden before you got to genocide. I think that's the litmus test of how bad a person you are.
Where are you going to put
if
the
you
bodies?
Hit genocide before, right?
See what I mean? You're going to run out of space eventually.
So anyway, they're on their little explore and they have their little heart to heart chat. And in the back of the shot for this scene, Peter's murder, Sammy's turning, and the dance scene are four windows through which daylight is streaming in. Blocked only by a few planks, not enough to make the room dark.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm like, if you're going to dig anywhere with a poker,
yeah,
maybe try the matchstick covered windows.
Yeah, okay. I knew that this was coming. And the reason I knew this was coming is because you texted me in all caps being sort of like, what the fuck am I watching? Why aren't they just getting out of that? Why the fuck are they just wandering around? Why aren't they getting out of that? You were so angry about it, mate. What I've done is I've gone back and rewatched this scene 5 or 6 times to be Jesus sort of like, Christ. God, he's such a fucking idiot. Clearly, there was metal things over the window outside. It's just a bit of wood over the top. No, you're entirely right. There is nothing but bare glass window covered with a bit of wood. Just a bit. But also, I got to thinking, right? And I was thinking, well, why wouldn't they just fucking write that in? Because the rest of the film is seamlessly written. Why have they done this? And then I was thinking, right, these characters, you've got a big, fuck-off, lovable, hamster-faced, gorgeous idiot. Uh-huh. And then you've got a rich hacker chick who is being possessed by Abigail. And they find this room. And the big, lovable idiot isn't going to go, oh, I know, I'll just pull the fucking wood off and get out the window, even though he should have, because he could have, because he's massive.
You'd
he
love him punched to pull through your wood that. Off.
Fucking yanks of wood in this film, I'm done. You know what I mean? That's it. Fucking clean up on aisle me. Like, that's a thing.
That's a t-shirt.
That's said out loud. So that could have happened. But then I also got to thinking, this fucking horrendous posh person rooftop garden attic layer thing,
mm-hmm.
It's probably on like the 3rd or 4th floor of this haunted mansion of a fucking vampire cave, right?
Look.
So if they break the window and then they get out, what's the plan then?
Drop four
stories to their death?
Also, look, we've had a weird month of meaningless, right? Because we did Ghostbusters Frozen Empire and we're like...
Let's not.
We both agreed... It was completely meaningless nonsense.
Yeah. Has no voice, no soul, no nothing.
We then covered Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, and went, we love this because it's meaningless nonsense.
But it tells you it's meaningless nonsense and steers into it full fucking speed. Do you know what I mean? It's not shit. It's not scared to be what it is.
This film is meaningless nonsense, and you've had a Godzilla X Kong time, and I've had a Ghostbusters Frozen Empire time.
That makes me feel awful, mate. That you've had two Frozen Empires this month. Like, I genuinely couldn't even imagine that, to be honest with you, mate.
I do think maybe we move away and we do something that has a bit of meaning because it's fair right now.
Yeah,
you know, we've had one of every outcome.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Although, is it? I mean, have I ever picked a film that? Because I know I often pick films,
okay. And
you're like, I would rather peel off my own eyelids and stick them up my arsehole. Then put that film on for 2 hours.
Yes.
And then you've watched it and you've gone, sorry, there's been a few.
I'll tell you what I'll do, right? I'm going to list off some of the films that I didn't want to do, but I did.
Right.
Right? And it's in all fairness, the list isn't that long. So we'll start off with Locke. It's Tom Hardy driving down the fucking motorway. That's how you sold me that film. And why the fuck are we doing this? Then there was Stutz and you sold it as Jonah Hill and his therapist working through their shit. And I was like, oh, okay, how fun that sounds. Bear in mind at this point, I'm like 6 months into therapy and it's getting heavy. And you were like, let's watch a film about a therapist. How about that? And I'm like, yeah, sure. Brilliant. Let's do that. Then you were like, how about a fucking World War I film? Not World War II, the fun one, the sequel.
The fun one.
What about World War I? And I'm like, All Quiet on the Western Front? And you're like, yeah, let's do that. It's a fucking right barrel laughs. All right, then, yeah, let's do that. And then you move on to some other shit like, I don't know, what about The Matrix fucking Reloaded? The Matrix Revolutions? And then we're like, oh, okay, well, let's, you know, well, I'm going to bring Evil Dead. Let's make it easy. And then what do? Christopher fucking Nolan, the one person whose tiny scarf has never made anyone angrier. I fucking hated that guy.
Right.
And we did every single one of those cunts, right?
I'm going to interrupt you because, right.
Thank you.
But my question is,
right.
Quite often you'll watch them. You'll have fun with them. You'll swing around.
Right.
Are there any on that list that you still hate?
There's not one, buddy. There's not one. I'm going to tell you why as well. It's nothing to do with the films. The films, then, they're not my cup of tea. I wouldn't go back and watch them. Christopher Nolan, I swung around to. His filmmaking's incredible. I'm not going to be first in the queue to see his new movies or anything like this. I will see them because they're impressive, but it's not it's not a big sort of like, wow.
Right, okay.
My dick is so hard for that tiny scarf. Do you know what I mean? It's nothing like that still. Yeah, so there's a lot of films in there that I wouldn't watch. I love them all dearly because of what they did for you. So right. You brought them to the table. I did not want to do them at all. I saw how happy they made you. And I was like, you know what? If Rob can be this excited, this passionate, and this invested in anything, I'm here for it. Like that's
very
me.
Few things I can be.
This is where I need to be. So fuck yeah, I'm going to watch Tom Hardy drive down a motorway and make phone calls and have conversations that he should have had 9 months ago. But it's fine. You know what I mean? Let's not get angry about it. The zone of interest, mate.
That was your pick.
Oh, all right. Oscars, that was your pick. I picked Zone of Interest because you picked Oscars. Fuck you. Okay, but what I'm saying is, Charlie Chaplin, I've never had any interest in Charlie Chaplin, never had any desire to watch him. Never in 1,000 years would I ever have sat down and gone, I'm going to watch a Charlie Chaplin film. The only three films that I've seen of Charlie Chaplin's are the ones you've brought to the podcast. I loved every one of them because of how much they meant to you. They did fuck all in numbers. They were listened to by about fucking 100 people. But at the same time, you and those 100
more
people
than that, but yeah,
lost
yeah,
your
yeah.
fucking minds. Do you know what I mean? You went crazy for it.
That's two things there. That's incredibly touching. And the reason I think sometimes it's hard for me to love the films that I don't enjoy that you brought is because
you hate me.
No. It's because of the sentence. I'm going to use your own sentence there. You said you saw what they meant to me.
Yeah.
Now, how much does Abigail mean to you? Or is it just something you used as an anesthetic? Like, if you bring a film that I'm not particularly that into, but it means a lot to you, I'm like, oh, okay, I see that this means something to Ben. It's added to his life. He's like, he's into this. This is a big part of what's helped him with the world. Again, that thing of like, because I use my films for physio, there are things I'm able to do or things I'm able to handle or situations I'm more familiar with that I'm better at because of film. Like Hedwig and the Angry Inch has legitimately helped the way that I deal with my romantic life and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, sure.
Got me off the sort of addiction to finding everything I'm lacking in another person, right? Brilliant. Yeah. It means something to me. But then when you go, oh, I like this, and I'm like, why? And you're like, ah, it's just, I could just not be me for 2 hours. And I'm like, but what can...
Okay. So this, the reason
it's not that,
that
I don't
film,
love you, it's that you don't,
I know,
you don't get anything from the films besides.
I know, I'm not going to argue with you. You are entirely right on that point. Like this film, I don't feel like this film's for me. It's not made for me. But the reason that I think it's an important, the reason I think it's important and the reason I'm celebrating it doing well is because it's going to mean something to the 35-year-olds in 15 years time.
Okay.
Who look back on it with the same fondness and the same love and the same value that I look back on the 1980s movies and what they do for me, this film is going to do for them. So I need to celebrate the filmmakers and the fact that this was made in 2024. I feel like it's an important document to have that this is, it's planning for the future and it's not just a cash grab. Okay. It's Universal fucking movies. Dracula, it's bag of shit, right? It's a cash grab piece of shit. I hated it. It's going to do nothing for no one. It did nothing at the cinemas. I'm fucking glad it did. Leave it alone. Never touch it again.
Yeah.
This one, it doesn't feel like a cash grab. It feels like a passion project. And that shit fills me with joy. And it makes me feel like I've got a bit more faith restored in humanity for these directors making horror films in such a way that they're going to be the B movies of the past for people in 15 years, and that's incredible.
Do you know what? I'll give you that, and I'll give the film that. This film, as much as it wasn't for me, feels like it's made by people because they enjoy their own work, right?
Exactly.
They've had an idea, they've set out to do a thing, and they've done the thing. Personally, I hate that thing, but do you know what it isn't? It isn't a designed by committee, studio led.
Exactly.
This will do. This will get some bums on seats. Exactly. We don't really care. The people that made this film cared about this film and they were very careful about doing a thing. I hate that thing, but not everyone is going to hate that thing. And at least it's a true thing. At least it's a real thing.
Exactly.
And it's not a focus grouped thing.
Exactly. It's not for everyone. It's not for everyone. If you're a younger horror fan, it's for you.
If you've never seen a film before, you'll love this.
I mean, that's objectively true because it would be your first film. So you'd be like, wow, this is what film
yeah,
is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I imagine it would be a fun time for you. So great. Welcome to the party. But at the same time, it's just, it's two directors having fun. And it's the most important thing that I can think of in a time when we get nothing but 14 Marvel movies every fucking year. But they don't make sense unless you watch the 14 Marvel series that have happened in between this bullshit.
Yeah, it's very... Okay, you know what I mean? I can summarize this film exactly, right?
Okay.
It's the Black Eyed Peas of horror.
I'm going to stop you right there because I don't... I already feel how offensive this is going to be towards you've me not and
listened to, if you've not listened to much hip-hop, if you don't really like hip-hop...
Sure.
You can put the Black Eyed Peas on, you can be 14 and you can go, oh, tonight's going to be a good night. And you're like, oh, I like hip-hop. And then after about 6 months, you'll find something else. That's it's a gateway drug.
Okay.
Actually, a gateway drug.
I'm going to agree with you here. Yeah. And in a shock turn of events, buddy, I'm going to agree with you here because I think Black Eyed Peas are the next generation or the next two generations Vanilla Ice, right?
Yeah.
Vanilla Ice is fucking terrible. Awful, awful musician.
MC
awful
Hammer.
Thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But... fucking, if you go to a club, a fucking school reunion or whatever the shit's going on, and someone bangs out Ice Ice Baby, fucking everyone is out there pumping their fists. And I don't care what you say, you can hate it as much as you want. There is not a single person that isn't there with a smile on their face. He's a shit musician. His songs are terrible, but he's fucking incredible when you're 35 and you want to feel 15 again. You know what I mean?
Do you want to play a game?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. What's it going to be?
You got a choice of games. One.
Okay.
We're not going to play two. All right. You have to pick one.
Fuck's sake. All right.
Do you want to play Pride or Prejudice? Where.
Not even a little bit.
Because it's Pride Month. Pride Month. No, you don't know what it is. Well, you've already answered. You said no. What it was,
I mean,
was
you carried on with it's Pride Month after I'd answered and I'll feel like a cunt.
Yeah.
Let's hear it out. No. Let's hear it out.
Okay, it was going to be, I was going to tell you a gay joke.
Yeah, let's not do this one.
And you were going to guess if it was a joke by a gay person or a member of the LGBTQ community.
Sure.
Making a funny joke.
Okay.
Or a bigot making a joke at their expense.
Right, hear me out.
And so you'd have been able to guess, is this joke coming from a place of pride?
Right.
Or a place of prejudice?
Right.
For instance.
No. Hold on. A, this is fucking incredible, right? Incredible.
Yeah.
Great premise. I love everything about this. B, hugely problematic.
No, it's not.
For what I can think of, two reasons. Because it's either horribly homophobic, a hate crime, some might say. It's either a hate crime or a cheeky lol. And if I get that wrong, I'm either in on the joke or committing a hate crime, which I'm not sure I want to commit to that, if I'm honest with you, bud.
Okay. Well, all right, fine. I'll fold away my little list.
Don't fold it away all the way though, because
Okay, do you want one?
Give me one.
How does a non-binary samurai kill people?
Oh, hold on. The only reason I know this is because you've told me this joke before in the past. Is it they slash them?
Yes, it is.
Yes, buddy, dude, you've told me that before, so I'm going to say that's prejudice.
No, that's pride. No. That's pride. Okay, well, that's all you're getting to that one, because you said...
All right. Well, I won.
And this one's more of a question. You did win. Everyone wins, mate, with pride.
Yeah.
And everyone loses with prejudice.
Everyone.
My next question. What's the biggest animal that you could beat in a cage match? Because you mocked me for the idea of me hunting a wolf. A thing I didn't even claim I was possible or willing to do, right? I mentioned it as a metaphor.
This all episode.
Yeah, I've been fuming, mate. I've been absolutely fucking fuming. All right.
You could have brought this up as a rebuttal, but it was like, you know what?
No.
Fuck you. I'm going to change the entire episode to make you look like a dick.
Yeah, yeah. By mass.
Fighting animals.
Yeah. Now, I know you're a vegan, so we'll justify this. I'm going to say this is just whatever animal you pick, it's just a cunt version of it, right? It's sending racist tweets.
It's been
like holding up homophobic signs at Pride events.
It's CCing everyone in an email that could just be for one person.
Yeah, yeah, and then hitting reply all.
Yeah, right. Fuck them.
So, and it's literally, it's looked you in the eye and said, I'm not going to stop this. The only way I will ever stop this is if you kill me with your bare hands inside the octagon.
I don't have bare hands. I have man hands.
Oh, now who needs a vasectomy?
Hey! Okay, I'm ready for this. So a bare knuckle fight with an animal, and you said by mass, so it's not like the tallest animal.
Well, no, because tall is like, you know, a giraffe is taller than an elephant, but
have you seen those bitches fight? Jesus Christ, I'd be knocked out in seconds.
I'd want nothing to do with that.
Fuck
that. But I also would want less nothing to do with an elephant.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sound. Okay. Elephants are slow, though, but it's a cage match.
They're fucking not, though. Elephants aren't fucking slow.
No, they're fast when they're on, like... Yeah, but straight and narrow.
And then they charge you.
Yeah, charging, quick as fuck. Take a sharp left turn. Fucking destruction derby. Yeah. You know what I mean? Takes them 5 minutes to get up. While you're in there, just fucking get a few jabs in on the bollock. Well, what are you going to do now? Winded. You know what I mean?
Oh, no, it's a female animal as well.
Oh, I'm fucked then, aren't I? All right.
Because I figured ostrich. You'd go to the balls because you're dirty. An ostrich.
Ostrich.
Ben, an ostrich. An ostrich fucking nearly killed Johnny Cash. When it unzipped him from neck to fucking pubis, all right?
Yeah, but I mean, he wasn't expecting to fight an ostrich. He was like, hey, buddy. I don't know how Johnny Cash talks.
I mean, you're not far off. But then
he got unzipped. But whereas I'm going in, like, fully fledged, like, right, expecting a fight. So the ostrich don't know he's fighting.
Yes, it does. It's been training for 6 months.
Nah.
It's done the press event. There's photos. What
you're saying, right, yeah, so you're saying that the ostrich is also Uwe Boll when he's trying to fight his critics. Is this what's going on?
Sick, yeah, this is a full UFC match.
Uwe Boll. Uwe Boll's the biggest animal I could take in a cage match. Uwe Boll. Uwe Boll. Uwe Boll, and the slim chance that Uwe Boll ever hears this, please fight critics again. Please. Please. I'll pay my own way. Fucking please. I'm desperate. I reckon I could take Uwe Boll in a cage match. Easy.
Oh, okay.
Maybe not easy, but I reckon I could do it. But also an ostrich.
Okay, I mean, you got me beat with Uwe Boll because mine's smaller than Uwe Boll.
What would you do?
And
if you
penguin,
say human...
Mate.
Oh, okay, I thought you were going to say human child.
No.
Emperor penguin?
Emperor penguin, two reasons.
Right.
They're a meter tall. They're surprisingly heavy. They've got a lot of muscle, right?
Yeah.
Shit legs, mate. Shit legs, and I reckon I could take him in a ground game. I reckon one spin kick.
Right. Okay. Sorry, something's just hit me, mate, and I've got everyone beat.
Right.
Blue whale. There's no water in that cage. I just have to wait.
Yeah, no, there would be. No, for sea animals.
We're not changing the fucking rules now, Rob. All right. No
way for me to run. The rules.
I can't fucking hold my breath for a day.
Ben, there's weight classes. All right.
Nah.
No, it's semi submerged. All right, this weight class is for a reason. Yes.
So it's a paddling pool. So it's a fucking mud wrestling a whale. I could just wait. I'll wait. I'll just wait for it to be weak as fuck, and then I'll just punch.
Okay, you'd mud wrestle a whale.
Yeah, easy. I'd win.
Mate, this entire episode is just t-shirt slogans. What are you going to rate the Black Eyed Peas?
What am I going to rate the Black Eyed Peas?
Yeah, of horror. How much of a fan of the Black Eyed Peas are you, Ben?
I'm not...
Say it in the recording. it on the internet, Ben.
I think I know two Black Eyed Peas songs. I think I know I know two. And it's that one where it's like Junk in the Trunk or whatever it is.
That's Lady Lumps.
Lady Lumps, that's the one.
Yeah, yeah.
What did I say? Lumps. Junk in the Trunk.
Junk in the Trunk. What you gonna do with all that junk? All that junk inside my trunk.
Yeah, yeah. I knew it was there somewhere. I'm going to rate the Black Eyed Peas of horror. As a film on its own, I think the writing's a little lackluster.
Little.
I think it's a little all over the shop. The lore's a little over the place.
Yes, little.
And it's in a fun way. It's in like a fun, it reminds me of fun 80s. I wouldn't say it's like a fun 80s B movie, but it reminds me of that. It's reminiscent of that.
Yeah, it shakes its boom boom.
So is that Black Eyed Peas?
You tell me, Ben. You're the fan.
I don't fucking know, man.
Come on, mate. Come on, mate.
I'm gonna rate Abigail on terms of it. In terms of it being a film, I'm gonna rate it a 6. In terms of it, in terms of its importance, though, I think it gains 2 points because it's important. So, no, not 2 points. It gains a point because it's important. So, I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10. It's an important cinema. I don't know what this is. Is this all just Black Eyed Peas stuff?
Just meet me halfway, Ben. Let's get it started and meet me halfway.
I don't know what this is. I feel like they're all references. I'm just not clued into what the source material is.
No, no, no. I'm just talking.
What does this mean, Rob? What are you rating it?
I got a feeling.
You're a cunt. I know that one.
I'm going to rate this. It's a 2. And the reason it's a 2 is I would have rated it a 0.
Okay.
But then over time, I've just been like, it's just a film. It's just a fine film. Mm-hmm. And anyone listening to this episode, here's what I would do. Listen to how much Ben's enjoyed it. Listen to how much I've hated it. And watch it for yourself.
Go make your own fucking mind up, you know what I mean?
Yeah, go make your own mind up. Because from my perspective, either you love it, you have a great time for 2 hours, in which case I'm really happy, or I'm right and I'm just as happy.
Yeah, there you
go. There's no lose scenario for me. Watch this film.
There's one lose scenario that I can think of.
Right.
A listener goes and watches this film and thinks, what are they talking about? This is definitely a sexy vampire film. And then in which case, the show's not for you. The show is not for you.
Oh, have we just got time for Comment Corner?
Yes, please. Yes, please. You messaged me earlier in this week and said you've got the best Comment Corner we've had to date. And I am desperate to hear it.
Yes, I do.
I've purposefully avoided all social media purely because I'm like, I'd rather wait for the show to find out the best comment we've had in a long time.
You mentioned your favorite vampire movie earlier.
Sure. Thirst.
Thirst. Now, it's an important word that because we don't get a lot of that in our comments.
No. No.
So we've been on social media now, Ben, for 2 years. And, you know, we know what we are. We're the Black Eyed Peas of men. And but Zoe Cat has got in touch to say, I just want to know why they're so dang good looking for Brits.
Hold on.
Which is a little bit like, it's a little bit like saying, that turd looks like Jesus.
Why are they so dang good looking for Brits?
For Brits.
That's fucking devastating.
In it just.
Bud, God that's damn. Hilarious. That's so funny. Wait. So for Brits is like a term of measurement that people outside of Britain use to have a like scale of a
But I kind of, I also think it's kind of perfect that we got our first bit of sort of physical validation and it came with a heavy qualifier. You know?
Oh, it was the biggest backhanded validation you've ever received in your 100%. Life. It was like, that's fucking incredible. Zoe Cat, first off, thank you. That's incredible. Second off, please clarify what this fucking scale is. What does for Brits mean?
We know what it means, Ben.
I just want to hear it. I just
want
to hear it.
You just want it confirmed. Yeah.
I need the validation. You got yours. Let me have mine.
And then our good friend, Godzilla_, who's been part of our episode last week, and it's been helping us promote the
episode. Gorgeous human being.
Absolutely lovely time. We posted about the kaiju Doug.
We did.
Because Doug is a kaiju that exists in the Legendary Monsterverse, whose literal in-fiction name is Doug. We posted about Doug, and Godzilla got in touch and said, Doug is the Bill Cosby of the movie Monster Universe. And I went, Doug's a date rapist. And they went, I didn't say that. And then they did a little eyes emoji. As if to say, I didn't say that. Which makes what I love the fact that we've got a direct line to Godzilla.
Yeah, Godzilla. And that came out of the Godzilla's, kaiju himself's mouth. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and Godzilla's given a shit about the other kaiju. Kong loves a drink.
Oh,
it's always
I
late
see.
On set. It's got a bit of, bit of a vodka whiff.
Oh, what, you think Mothra's just covered in magic powder? Yeah, I wonder where she gets that, eh? It's 3 a.m. the fucking dark alley behind the KFC. Yeah, maybe brush the powder off before shooting, bish. You know what I mean? That's fucking awesome. I haven't brought a comment with me this week. What I've done is there are
is this another installment of Ben shares information handed to him in his private life via
No. This is three beautiful human beings who were very, very, very dear friends of mine. They're big fans of the podcast. I see them and talk to them on a daily basis. I fucking adore each and every one of them. They've started a podcast. Andy Bailey, Adam Smart, and Amber, they've all got together and they're doing a new podcast called Control Alt Critique. So that's CTRLALT Critique. It's fucking incredible. They've just released their first episode. I listened to it and it made me furious that the editing quality was that it hit where we were after about a year and 2 months. The pacing is fucking nigh on perfect. And they discuss everything from like TV shows to movies to video games. It's wonderful. And I'm incredibly proud of each of every one of them. We love them dearly. Please go and listen to that show. Support them. Show them that what they're doing is worthwhile, because it fucking is.
I mean, I'm going to throw in a quick counterpoint there. They are good enough that I feel threatened, so don't go and listen to them. They are a competitor now, and I will stamp them out. I'm going to smother this baby in the womb, because they are very likely good enough that they're going to rise faster than we do, Ben, and then I'm going to be sat there with your dear friends having outperformed us in 6 months, and I will not have that. That's how good their podcast is, so fucking don't you dare listen to it, all right?
I'd be surprised if it takes them longer than a year to get to where we are right now. It took us 2.5 years, it would be a surprise to me if it took them a year.
In which case, if those guys need any editing done, I am very reasonably priced.
Bro, Amber's editing. She's smashing it, mate. Smashing it. But what I'm going to do is we're going to get them on the show. We're going to get them on. They're fucking close friends of ours. You know what I mean? You'll be hearing of them. You'll be seeing them. We're going to get some fucking crossovers on the go.
Sadly,
guys, thank you so fucking much for hanging out with us this week. It's been an absolute pleasure. The fact that you are here with us, listening to us, validating us, giving us that much needed, that supple attention.
This is going weird, Ben.
That we need to feel like people. You know what I mean?
All right. Before we get in.
Sure. My bad. Give it the snip. Dad jokes out. Here we go.
In order to thank you for the hour of your week you spent with us, especially at the start of the week, Ben is going to wrap up the themes, subtext, meaning of this film into a nice little Monday motivation pep talk for you.
Yeah.
And I am going to cosplay a society and just tell you to consume.
So in the film, Abigail takes it upon herself to track down her father's enemies who have wronged her father, the father who abandoned her, who it doesn't give a shit that she exists. She tracks them down and she takes them out one by one to try and win his affection. But what I'm going to say to you, dear listener, the lesson that I took from this movie is that she shouldn't have tracked them down to destroy them. She should have tracked them down to build her army, to rise up and fuck you, Dad! And then that would have been mint. Also, my dad also left, as did Rob's. Me and Rob.
Why is that the bit I love?